Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
This is episode 44.
I believe that is XLIV.
Ooh.
It's fancy.
XLIV?
Sure. I mean, I was thinking Roman numerals, but you know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Anyway, thank you once again for tuning into the show. I am your host, Andrew.
And I am Anitra.
And we've got lots of cool stuff to talk about today. We have played a lot of games.
We have played a lot of games, in part because it was spring break for our kids.
Yes.
Even though I was laid up with stomach flu for half of spring break.
It was awesome.
Not the best. Really the worst.
The best where by the best, I mean the worst.
In fact, the worst.
Okay. All right. Awesome. So we played a ton of stuff, both with the kids, and we had some friends over, and we played a bunch of stuff with them as well. We'll talk about all of that, and then we're going to get into our show topic for the evening, which is something that we kind of have to wrestle with a lot.
Well, yes and no. At this point, I would say it's something we kind of take for granted, but...
Well, sure.
So... We mentioned that we have people over to play games on a pretty regular basis. It's not just us and our kids. But if you want to have people over to play games, where do you start?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're scared by the idea of, like, what do you mean game night?
Well, one of the things that gets really tricky about it is what's the balance, right? So a lot of games are 2 to 5 players. Well, what if you invite a bunch of people and... somehow all of them say they want to come over, and now you've got like 8, 10, 12 people coming to your house. Like, how do you balance this? What do you do? I mean, you can look at certain games, or you can look at kind of breaking up the group. What are some effective ways to do that?
So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, the games we've been playing the last 2 weeks.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's see. On the video game side,
More Zelda,
and more Zelda.
Yep. Of course.
Even for our children.
I was ashamed to discover that I have spent more than 80 hours playing that game now already.
Ashamed? Proud?
Kind of more ashamed.
Proud shame?
Proud shamed. Oh, I like that. Proud shamed.
Our kids have also been playing, let's see, our 6-year-old is still really into Disney Infinity, and in fact used a gift card he got for Easter to buy more Disney Infinity figures. A lot of Pokemon from our oldest. A lot of talking about Pokemon and a lot of talking about Zelda. Yep, that's kind of my life right now. When they're not quoting random movie lines at me, they're telling me random facts about Pokemon that I don't care.
But, well, yeah. If we're going to talk about video games, we are excited because there's a couple of couch co-op games that we are going to start playing pretty soon.
Yes!
So Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, PlayStation Plus free game for April.
Which means, for those of you listening, if you have PlayStation Plus, you have a little less than a week left to go download it for free. I have not even played it yet. I'm still going to tell you to go download it for free.
And also on Xbox One, we're going to be buying Overcooked and playing that together, and I'm excited
for that
as well. So that'll be an upcoming update on those two games.
But, in addition, as long as we're talking about video games, we... got a notice about something called Ubongo, which is a puzzle board game, but is coming to iOS and Android as a special promotion this coming weekend. So Friday the 28th through Sunday the 30th. It is completely free, both on the Google App Store and on the iOS, the Apple
Download
App Store.
Download that game.
So Ubongo, if you like puzzles.
Ubongo.
Also in the show notes.
All right. So I've been playing some stuff with our 8-year-old.
Yep.
I don't remember if we talked about it on the last show. Maybe not. I sat down with her and I played Gruff. Gruff is that game with the mutated goats. It's this weird kind of 2-player, almost magic-y style game.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting game. It's definitely embraces the weird. I decided that I would try it with Claire. The game is, I think it's rated for like 10 plus or 12 plus or something like that, but she's pretty precocious. So we played, and it took her less than one game to figure out like what was going on.
Good.
And, I mean, there's some, you know, sort of multi-step strategy stuff that I think that she'll continue to get better at. But she has been asking me to continue to play that game.
So she wants to play more.
So awesome. Yeah, so that's a commentary in that game. It's called Gruff. There's two different versions of it that you can get right now online on Amazon. There's the regular edition, and then there's one called like Clash of the Battle Goats or something like that. The Clash one is smaller. It's almost like a starter pack. But for some reason, they're right. At least last time I checked, they were the same price on Amazon. So I would get the one that's not Clash of the Battle Goats because it's got more stuff in the box.
Okay. In the show notes, I will link to both of them, but say that we recommend the one that has more stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're both good. It's just in terms of how much you get for your money.
Sure.
And by the way, it is worth saying that the stuff that's in the starter set is not in the full set.
Oh, that's nice. So they're not making you spend your money twice.
If you were to get both, you would have a sum total of more stuff.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, it's a really neat game. One of the kind of cool mechanics about it is that you have these little clips that go on the cards, mm-hmm. and so stats can grow over time.
Mm.
And so it's not like Magic where you have to put a piece of equipment on or an enchantment or whatever onto a creature to increase its stats. There's things you can do to actually increase the permanent stats of your creatures.
Cool.
Which is kind of a neat thing. And it's got an asymmetric battle mechanic. And I would say, take a look at it if you're into that kind of, if you're into like Magic and Star Realms and stuff like that. It's not a deck builder, but, It's a pretty neat, not too crunchy deep two-player game.
It's not a deck builder, but you do do some choosing at the beginning of the game of what builds you want, right?
Yep. And the cool thing about it is it's always every single one of these decks. So you choose three of these gruffs, which are these mutated goat creatures, right? Sure. And then each one of them has a deck associated with them, and then you mix those together.
Oh, okay.
And that's how you form the deck that you're going to play. It's kind of like Smash Up a little bit, I guess.
Sure.
But, yeah, so you only choose a certain subset of each deck to put in your total combined deck. And
so it is still kind of a deck builder.
Well, it's not a deck builder in the classic sense like a game like Dominion is,
right,
where you're trading stuff out and buying better stuff and like
it's more like a Smash Up where it's one and
done.
Yeah,
there's no deck evolution over
it.
The course of the game. And it's neat because every single deck has certain cards that have a little icon in the corner, and it's basically is if this is your first time playing with this deck, these are the cards you want to use just to kind of get a sense of how the mechanics in this deck work and stuff like that.
Cool.
So it is a little bit more crunchy than a lot of the stuff we talk about, but my 8-year-old likes it, and so it's I'm looking forward to playing it with her some more.
Cool.
The other game I played with her was Fight for Olympus, which I've talked about on the show before, and I really enjoy it. It's not as deep as even Gruff.
No, it's really not.
It's definitely a light game. It's definitely kind of a filler game, but I still enjoy it. I still like the artwork. That's a game that that the written review for that's going to be coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, it's one of those games that looks complicated at first blush, but when you get into it, you realize that basically everything is laid out in front of you. Every card describes exactly what it does,
yep.
And so it's really not that complicated as long as you can, first of all, read. And second of all, kind of hold the different things in your head a little bit at the same time.
Right. And getting into another set of the games that kind of we all played, the other game that I played with her after we played Fight for Olympus was Dr. Eureka.
Yes, we have we were sent Dr. Eureka to write a review. That's going to be up on the website in about a week or so. And we have definitely been putting this game through its paces.
Yeah, that is a pretty fun game. It's a Dexter.
You talked about it right after you went to New York Toy Fair.
Yeah, so
you described how it went, and I was like, oh, that sounds kind of neat. Mm-hmm. Now that I've played the game, I really like the game because dexterity games are way more up my alley.
So
as I am realizing.
Now that you've played Dr. Eureka, in the booth at Toy Fair, they had giant
test tubes,
test tubes
you need to hold with two hands?
Not with two hands, but like your hand would wrap around it.
Gotcha.
Right? Like it was the size of a coffee can.
Gotcha.
Around. And you're trying to play
funny.
With those.
Yeah, funny.
It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, even with a game like that, I thought I was going to waste her.
No way.
No.
She's
beat her.
Reasonably good at it.
I beat her, but she it was a good challenge. It was fun.
when the review goes up, there will be a warning in there that Dr. Eureka is not a good game for people who are very competitive.
Mm-hmm. And are sore losers. Like, you could be competitive.
You could be competitive with it. It's a game that naturally, because it's a speed-based game, it engenders a lot of competition. But if you're the kind of person that, like, gets unreasonably competitive or is a sore loser, you do not want to play this game because everybody gets behind at some point, unless you're just preternaturally good at it. So, yeah. Also, if you have any problems with dexterity, if your fine motor control is not great, also not a good game to play.
So, yeah. So, we are working with Blue Orange on a couple of games, and so we played a few more.
Yep. We played some Battle Sheep.
Review for that actually went up.
Is already up. Yep. Review for Battle Sheep is up on the site right now. Go check it out. Written by our friend Corey.
Mm-hmm.
I highly enjoy this game. I like how simple it is to learn and play. And
I actually had never played it before. The kids took it out, and I taught the kids how to play in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's very, very simple and straightforward.
And they've pulled it out a few times since and played just the two of them.
Yep.
So it's really nice. What else did we play? Also from Blue Orange, we tried out Clear for Takeoff.
Mm-hmm. Clear for Takeoff is a little sort of mini strategy game where you have three sizes of planes and you're trying to get them through the stages of taking off from an airport.
Yep.
It's light strategy, good for kids. Actually, our contributing writer Corey is going to write a review of that one as well.
Yep.
That'll probably come out in, you know, maybe a month.
Yeah, like that. End of May, something like that.
Probably middle of May.
What else? We have been playing some Barnyard Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
I have not managed until this past week to get more than one kid to play with me at a time.
Okay.
And it's very different with more than two players.
Sure.
But I am pleasantly, for a game that's a bluffing game, it does work just as well with two players as it does with more. Which is a nice feature. Sure. It just, there's a few slight shifts to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Two players versus more players.
Right.
I'd love to play that one with a bigger group, more than three people. So we're going to make that happen before we review it.
I think so. We also played yet one more Blue Orange game, which was King Domino.
Yes.
King Domino, you know, I didn't know anything. We've only played it one time. So I wasn't really sure how I was going to like the game. It's sort of this blend of like Carcassonne and a little bit of maybe Kingdom Builder, but not really, and a little bit of almost like Cathedral, in that you're limited in the shape and size of what you can build. But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I thought it did a great job of distilling a lot of that kind of structural sort of strategy.
Yeah.
Into very simple mechanics.
A very simple
game. That were super approachable and easy to understand.
Yeah. We haven't played that one with the kids yet. I'm looking forward to it. We just played it, group of adults, and we all sat there and went, but if I take that one?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't want that one. Oh. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, I think
it would move faster.
I think if you wanted to be cruel with a game like that, you could really victimize a child. So this is a good game for like a parent and a kid, as opposed to like, there are some games, like there are some games that genuinely adults and kids could just play them together.
Yeah.
This is a game where, and it's not even like you're taking it easy on your kid kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you could be really vindictive in a game
in King Domino.
Yep.
We need to give this some more thought. And you can't do that, as a good example, in some of the other games we played, like Dr. Eureka and Battlesheep.
Right.
You can't be vindictive.
Right.
Well,
maybe a little bit in Battlesheep because it's area control.
But it takes so much work to be vindictive in Battlesheep that it's generally not worth it.
Right.
Sometimes it is. And we played one of our old favorites we hadn't pulled out in a long time, Couriers.
Yeah.
With a subset of our usual gaming group.
Fear the Quake Dragon.
Strong Quake Dragon.
Any Quake Dragon, really.
The worst. The worst. I did not even get on the board before our friend won with his Quake Dragons.
That's good stuff.
But I'm actually super excited. In the past couple of months, we've gotten not one, but two expansions to Couriers. So,
and one of the expansions that we got actually has two other expansions in it.
I know. So I'm excited to play some more Quarriors again now that I kind of back into
scratch the itch, and now yeah. you're just like, oh.
Especially whoa. Especially if the expansions manage to balance out a little better so that things like the Quake Dragon just destroying everything every turn.
I have a feeling this summer we're going to have multiple game nights a week.
There's a good chance.
I think that's going to happen. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Man, I just... board gaming is one of those things that the more you do it, the more you love it, and the more you want to do more of it. It's good stuff. I like it. Plus, I'll be done with Zelda by then.
This is true. The way you're going, you'll be done with Zelda in about 2 weeks.
You're not
wrong. Stay tuned,
yeah.
everybody.
Yeah. Okay.
I, on the other hand, will not be done with Zelda until sometime in like 2018. So that's all right.
All right. What else we got?
That is it for the list of games that we've played.
Okay. Well, I will. I'll give a little bit of a preview. We have 5 games coming in for review.
We do.
We have The Mysterious Forest from ELO, and we have 4 games coming in from the Haywire Group.
Cool.
And I think some other stuff, too. So it's going to be a really, really exciting spring. There's a lot of stuff going on. So
good
stuff. Stay tuned. We're going to have a giveaway starting, I think, next week.
I believe next week.
So that'll be good. And yeah, I think we should give more stuff away.
I think we should.
I think we should do that.
Hey, listening audience, do you think we should give more stuff away?
Yes. Right. We'll see what we can do. We'll try.
Yeah. So lots more game news and reviews coming your way.
Mm-hmm.
Before we break, those of you who follow us on Facebook may have seen that I linked to a story from someone else about the game Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting and kind of sums up the best things about the board gaming or video gaming experience. The short version of this story is this guy's always trying to get his wife to play board games. She doesn't really enjoy them, but every once in a while, she just kind of like, sure, you know, for you, honey, let's play a board game. So they play Lanterns and, you know, it's fine. And then at one point she gets really sick and is basically doesn't want to get out of bed. But she says, no, honey, I told you I was going to play games with you. Is there anything we can do that I can be in bed and we can play? And he goes, you know what? Lanterns. There's an iOS app for Lanterns. Let's try that out. So they do. They enjoy it. And he starts finding that she likes playing it on her own. And so when she gets better, he's like, all right, let's play more Lanterns. And the magic is not really there in the board game. And he realizes, watching her continue to play it on the tablet,
sure,
that with her, it's a great kind of just chill out experience. It's mm-hmm. not always about winning. It's about Lanterns in particular, the whole idea is you're supposed to be creating this beautiful display and matching colors and things like that.
Right.
And so it can just be very zen of just getting your tiles to match up and getting the colors right, even if you're not getting the points to win. So I thought it was a really neat story. It kind of distills for me one of the ways in which I really enjoy gaming is just to enjoy the game itself and not really have it be about winning or losing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of feel that way. There's certain games that I almost feel more rewarded by watching the mechanics play out than the end game.
Yeah.
Like a great example for me is Zulkin. Right, because you have to set all of these things in motion so far in advance.
Sure.
That when they play out and they actually play out successfully, I'm like, that was awesome. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about Through the Ages because again, you have to kind of orchestrate this thing. You feel a little bit like a god when putting everything these pieces actually in place
falls,
and
you're in
watching
plan.
Them unfold, and the woven tapestry lays out in front of you, and it's not a just mess of brown
sure
kind of thing.
Sure.
I always lose at both of those games,
but you still
but
enjoy
it's
playing
fun
them.
To play
yeah
so
yeah meanwhile the one time I played Zulkin, I did enjoy it, but I also felt really stressed out by the end because I felt like I didn't really get a lot of what was going on. I did kind of at a low level, but
you didn't
I couldn't
get what was going on, except you beat me.
Well, I got it at a low level, but I felt like there's definitely way more strategy here that I just cannot grasp, and
right.
it bugged me. So I think that's different strokes for different folks, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's a game that you just have to play a bunch of times.
Sure. That doesn't surprise me either.
There's games that you can understand immediately, and there's games that you can't.
And me personally, like a 2 or 3 hour game is pretty much guaranteed not to be a game I'm going to play a bunch of times.
So, okay, that's fair.
Just the way it is. But yeah, so I wanted to bring that up before we went to break. Mm-hmm. Now we're done talking about it.
Let's go to break.
So you want to have a game night?
I do. I do. Right.
So those of you out in listener land may either be faced with the problem of you don't know how to get a bunch of people together to play games, mm-hmm. or you want to get a lot of people together to play games. Right. Like you have no problem getting 4 people together, but what if you want 8 or 10 or 20 people to get together and play games?
Right. And I mean, I'm assuming here that you're talking about this in the context of like the issue is not like how do I ask my friends if they want to play games with me, right? That's that's a psychologist situation, not a family gamers podcast situation.
I do have one tip for that.
Okay,
if you're having trouble getting anybody together to play games, the key is to really talk to your friends and say, look, some people get together and have dinner and watch a movie. Some people get together and, you know, have dinner and go watch a sports game. This is just a different form of entertainment. I want us to get together and eat dinner and play games.
Sure.
So please give it a shot.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is kind of battling that stigma, right?
Yeah. Tell them it is not going to be Monopoly.
Or Chutes and Ladders.
If they're children. you know, and... If necessary, even tell them that it's not going to be charades and scattergories. Although I do like scattergories.
Scattergories is fine.
Yeah.
Or Risk.
But, you know, try to... You can show people that, like, look, there are short, fun games that are not like the games you've played before.
I really think it's funny. I mean, obviously, you know, as people who have a podcast about board gaming... we are in our larger friends group, the people with the games, right? and it is kind of funny to have a conversation with someone, and they'll say something like, "Oh yeah, you know, I've played the Catan or the
Carcassonne."
Exactly. I almost want to take them under my wing. And say, let me show you this world, this whole new world, that we live in. And I think that there is something about the untapped potential of the unknowing, you know, potential board gamer, right?
Yeah,
that is kind of exciting, and I think that a lot of people who really love board games are. Not too passionate. I don't want to say they're too passionate.
They are evangelists for board games.
They in a way that maybe turns some people off.
Yes, definitely. Right?
So it's definitely a lot more about the social and expressing the importance and the value and the desire for the social experience.
Yeah.
And not just the crunchy, like, I'm going to...
That's why my mom plays games.
I'm going to show my cardboard
for the social experience.
Right.
Yeah. Except Scrabble. She doesn't do Scrabble for social. She does Scrabble for blood. that's my quick suggestion if you're just trying to get a small group of people together and they're not gamery people. But assuming you're going for a much larger group, how do you do that? How do you manage it? How do you split people up in groups?
And how do you fit the DJ in with all those board game tables, right? I'm kidding.
Not that kind of party. So I figured I would draw on some experiences that you and I share, mm-hmm. Of church game night, and a few times we have run a game night fundraiser for our kids' school.
Mm-hmm. Which is awesome, by the way.
Which was pretty fun. So fun we did it again. And also my recent experiences at Granite Game Summit.
Sure.
Because that really what Granite Game Summit is a giant 3-day board game party. You know,
there are worse things.
Yeah. So, step one, pick the games that you want to be available to play. Right? Sounds simple?
Sounds reasonable.
If you're looking at reasonably large groups of people, you want games that are relatively short, like an hour or less, and games that are easy to teach. Because you're assuming that people coming will not have played every game that you have played and want to play.
Right. I would also add to this the encouragement to people to bring games.
Yeah, sure. So what makes a short and easy to teach game?
What makes a, like, what's a good game example?
Like what are some good examples?
Oh, Duple would be a perfect example for this. This is something we talk about a lot. A game that you love, Monopoly Deal, would be
a short, easy to teach game.
A lot of stuff like a Forbidden Island or a Castle Panic, stuff that's cooperative because that way you're teaching them strategy and
as
exposing
you're playing
everything
it.
That you have and opening it up like that.
I mean, most party games, you kind of mentioned Duple and Anomia already. Apples to Apples, obviously, if anybody doesn't know how to play that yet.
Somehow. I actually would say that something like an Apples to Apples is really good in a party situation because you can kind of jump into it and drop out of it whenever you want to.
Yes.
So and anything in that, I don't know what that genre is called. There's a
party game. Really.
Well, but the whole, you know, Apples to Apples, Cluster Fight, Super Fight, Cards Against Humanity, all that stuff.
Like, bring your own book.
What is that called? I don't know what.
I don't know if that has a genre name, but maybe it
should.
That's
what I mean when I said that kind of game.
Yeah. Actually, as an aside, I was going to get to this later, but with really large groups, like 20 people or more, it's probably good to have some sort of party game like that going from early on, because then you can minimize the problem of, okay, my game ended. I don't really want to play another game with these people, or I don't want to play, not necessarily, I don't really want to play the next game that the rest of these people want to play.
Right.
What do I do?
Right. So
stand around.
If my game is over and it looks like there's another half an hour on somebody else's game, like how do you feel?
Like, what do
time?
I do?
Right.
Yeah. And if a great answer is go play this other game that you can drop into at any time.
Mm-hmm.
I will suggest a few other games that are relatively well known and would be good for a party game night situation. Things like Ticket to Ride.
Sure.
It's slightly on the longer end, but still good. Obviously, Catan. It's not that we don't like Catan.
You couldn't see her rolling her eyes. I mean, it was pretty intense.
It's not that we don't like Catan. It's just like I like Ticket to Ride better as an intro game. And
this is well-trod
land. We've been over this many times. Some of the games we've been reviewing on the site recently, like Battlesheep, are much shorter filler games, but still good. Especially good if you have a mixed ages group with some kids and some adults.
So games like that would be good options for kind of getting people in and, you know, starting off the night with some of this really approachable stuff, things like that.
It leads to the next important tip. We're doing these because these are easy to teach. You need to have a person prepared to teach each game.
Okay.
You know, makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you can't guarantee that every person is going to know the game. Some games are 5-minute instruction and then you can let the players at it. Battlesheep's a great example of that. Some games, having a teacher means one of the players in the game needs to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say Ticket to Ride is probably a good example of that.
Sure.
There are different ways to handle this depending on the size of your group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's just you and you're expecting 20 people, enlist maybe one friend, and between the two of you, you can probably manage it. And keep your list down of like what you expect to offer. If you have a really large group...
20 people wasn't a really large group?
Well, I'll tell you how they handled it at Granite Game Summit, which is a really large group.
Okay.
Two ways. One was they had their developer alley, which was this, you know, developers showing off their games, but that means you have games already in progress with a dedicated teacher there. Another way they handled it was to have signs anybody could pick up from where near where they had the water coolers that said teacher wanted. So you know, like, oh, I've always wanted to play this game. I've never played it before, so I'm not really clear on the details. Hey, you know what? I'm going to put this sign down and see if somebody will come over and help, you know, say the two or three of us who are trying to figure it out.
Right.
That's in that really big distributed kind of system. At our church game night, it was also pretty haphazard, but it tended to be, you know, oh, hey, is this your game? Can you show me how to play it?
Right. I mean, it was pretty organic. I think that there was nothing wrong with that.
It did lead to a 8-year-old trying to teach a bunch of adults how to play Battlesheep,
which is fantastic.
Which was pretty fantastic.
So, I mean, while we're talking about, you know, big group stuff, like, why don't we touch on? I mean, we touched on Granite Game Summit a little bit. Why don't we talk about like how we did the Game Right game night? So, sure. Just a brief aside, if you don't know, obviously we love Game Right. We talk about them all the time. They have this kind of charitable endeavor thing that they do called the Game Right Game Night, and what this essentially is somebody will volunteer to run one of these things usually for a nonprofit. We ran one for our daughter's school, and what happens is Game Right will send you a large supply of demo games and a small stock, and you set everything up, and there's all these games that are available for demo. People can come in and play them for free and try them out, whatever. And if they want to buy some games, they buy some games for retail price.
Yep.
And 50% of that money goes to the organization that's hosting it, which is not, you know, not to talk too much about how the sausage is made, but that basically means that Game Right's not making any profit, but the cost of the game is being paid for. That's roughly how the markup works on board games.
And honestly, the markup, I mean, what the school gets back from that is way better than most other fundraisers.
Seriously, you are not lying. Way better. And, you know, it's fun to just go and play some games. And, like, if you don't see anything that strikes your fancy, like, whatever. It's not a big deal. So that's the Game Right Game Night. So we've run two of these at this point. We can talk about how we managed this exact issue. And for us, we really kind of took on the brunt of the teaching ourselves.
When we got in the demo games, the two of us would try over the week or two ahead of the game night to play as close to every game as we could.
Right. Thankfully, if we do this again, we only have to play the new stuff.
Yeah. Enough to at least understand the rules. Right.
And so what we did was they send these in the box. They send these stickers that say Game Guru on them.
Yep.
And you just slap one of those on. And if somebody has a question, they know that they can ask a Game Guru. And we kind of would walk around the floor and, if you know, just check in on people, sort of like the manager at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And and that was a really effective way to manage a large group of people, many of whom had not played any of these games before.
Yes.
And it was really, really successful.
I mean, the key in a situation like that is that you, as the quote-unquote host, in a setup like that, you're not really going to be playing games. You're not there for fun, although you should still have a good time.
Right.
But
well, you're doing it for the love of the games, right?
You're facilitating everybody else playing the games. If we had more volunteers, which if we ever do this again, we should have at least a few more volunteers.
If we do this again, we're doing it for a much bigger school, so we better have some volunteers. Truth.
If you had a few more volunteers, you could have, you know, each person has two or three games that they feel like they know well and they can teach, and sit at a table with those couple of games and say, I am here, play these games with me.
Right.
So that kind of, it depends on how many involved people you have or not.
So those are kind of some ways to really manage larger groups. And I mean, you know, when you're talking about 20 plus people, like, this probably isn't in your house, but you know, if you want to get together a group of this size, like, these are some tips that we've learned anecdotally, I suppose, that we've learned by doing, I guess.
Yeah.
What about smaller groups?
Like 8 or 9?
Or whatever.
I mean, large enough you're not really going to play one game. Mm-hmm. I would say it's probably best to like start off the night with a party game.
Okay.
Assuming everybody's getting there, you know, kind of filtering in. Just kind of get everybody loosened up and ready to play. And then and then split into two or three groups. You know, say, hey, well, we're doing a, you know, a puzzly game over here. We're doing a co-op game over here, mm-hmm. and we're doing a, you know, heavy Euro over here. Then they'll be there for the rest of the night. Right. Ignore them.
And we actually found when we did this in our house that it was actually better to have all the tables in the same room.
Yes, because if at all possible,
you still get cross pollination and cross socialization.
Yes,
even though people are playing different games, because you know if you have six people playing a game, five people aren't taking their turn.
Yeah, right. I mean, there aren't too many six-player games where everybody is going simultaneously.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, I remember that we kind of we talked about that. Like, do we want to have everybody? Because we could put people in other rooms. It wasn't right. a big deal. Do we want to have everybody in the same room? Do we not want to do that? I think the answer is to have people in the same room.
I think if you're going for that idea of this is a social gathering where the main entertainment is games, that is what you want to do. You want to put as much as is possible, put everybody in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully with enough room to have some separation between your games, but you live with what you got. I guess that's about it.
Cool.
That's our last recommendation. If you have everybody in the same area, then you have less of the, you know, my game's over, what to do now problem.
All right. So that's some tips that we kind of have picked up over the years when we've hosted game nights, and we hope some of those were helpful for you. Maybe some of those were like, obviously, Andrew, like, I know that. But I bet you there's some nugget in there for each and every person who's listening to the show.
I got one last one.
Oh, okay.
Have your food in a separate place from your games.
Okay.
Like, don't serve your food on the same table where you're playing games.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would say
you would think that would be obvious.
How about make the rule known? The food doesn't come back to the table.
Well, or go with really unmessy mm-hmm. food.
Yeah. I think that's also possible. And I agree with you. I think that's a pretty good policy with board gaming in general.
Yeah.
And to that point, I would recommend our friends, Spencer and Lara, the Married with BG.com.
Board games.
Married with board games folks, because they talk about game night grub on almost every episode of their show.
They do.
And that's something they take into consideration when
how messy is this food?
Yeah, seriously. So check them out, marriedwithbg.com.
Nice.
It's good stuff. So that's going to be it for us this week. I am your host, Andrew.
And I am Anitra. You can find us
on our website,
thefamilygamers.com.
Okay. You can email me, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Or me, anitra@thefamilygamers.com. You can find us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
Or on Twitter, @FamilyGamersAA.
Check us out on iTunes. You can just do a search for the show, The Family Gamers Podcast. Please leave us a review and leave us a rating. Thank you very much to the people who have recently done so. We really do appreciate it.
And that's it for the show. Don't forget to head over to thefamilygamers.com and check out our recently published reviews for Wise Alec and for Battlesheep. And until next week,
play games with your kids.